I'm Kristen Hatcher, host of Power User TV. Joining me today is Brad Wardell of Stardock, Tom Chick of Quarter to Three, and Derek Batting of NeoWin. Hey, gang.
Hey.
Hello, Kristen. Everyone.
I actually, I just got back from Dragon Con, if you can believe that. It's one of the largest science fiction, it is actually the largest science fiction and fantasy convention in the world.
Did you go as a Klingon or a Borg?
I didn't. I went because my husband was actually speaking, because he's a...
As a Klingon or a Borg?
But I am so not, my head is just not in the real world today, I gotta tell you. It's just somewhere else altogether. But I have to announce today that I am a nerd.
No, don't say it's not so.
I'm a total nerd.
Now, just by virtue of having attended Dragon Con, or for other reasons?
Oh, well, before I went to Dragon Con, I thought, wow, I'm going to be kind of embarrassed to be seen with all these nerds and everything. But as soon as I got there, I was just completely...
My people.
So into it. Yeah, my people. I've come home. I love you all. So, boy, what... 30,000 people there. What an incredible show. Just
what's the square root of 30,000? Like, quick. Prove your nerdiness.
Oh, I'm not that kind of nerd. I am going to try.
And were there any exciting announcements at Dragon Con? What did you find out?
Well, there was a lot of, like, it just kind of depended on what you wanted to focus on while you were there. They have all these different tracks that you can go and, you know, find out, like, there was an art track. So if you want to be an artist, then you go and you take all these little classes and things and kind of try and learn how to break into the business. They had I don't know if any of you are familiar with the science fiction book Wheel of Time. They had a Wheel of Time track, an entire track for this one.
You know, Kristen, I got to say, that's so cute, and that is evidence that you are only newly inducted into the nerd community when you would say, I don't know if anyone's familiar with these Wheel of Time books.
I know,
if they're new to you.
Has anyone really heard of Tolkien? What's a Hobbit?
Though. It's true. You know, I've been reading these books, but apparently I have not been truly a sci-fi nerd, I gotta say, because I just had no idea. I mean, I knew that they were popular, like I knew they had Star Trek conventions and stuff like that, but I had no idea. This is apparently like the fourth or fifth largest convention in the world, not science fiction fantasy convention, just overall, any get-together of any groups of people, fourth or fifth largest convention in the world. I think that's shocking. I think it's great.
Well, what about Comdex?
I'm totally going next
year. Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'm dressing up.
Now.
So, anyway, I am going to try and focus. Yes, I am. One of the nice things I did find out when I got back, though, is that we are actually Power User Podcast number 73 on Podnova.
Woohoo!
I know. It's not as good as number one. Much better than number 9,526, which is, I think, how many podcasts they have listed there now.
And even better than 74.
Yeah, exactly. Just a little bit better than 74. So apparently somebody's listening to us, so we better, you know, straighten up and try and act professional.
Our dozens of listeners demand excellence.
That's right.
Okay. Actually, I do look at the logs, and we are getting thousands of listeners per week now.
That's great.
So here's a shout out to everyone listening. Thank you very much for listening. We're grateful that you got us to number 73.
So and make sure you go to quartertothree.com and neowin.net and win.
And buy Galactic Civilizations too.
That's right.
Yeah. In fact, hey, we're number 17 on GameSpot overall.
Oh, wow.
Oh, good, good.
That's great.
So that's on all video games, console and PC.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. that's actually very impressive.
They just ran a preview of the game. Is it tied in to traffic like that, or are you consistently around 17?
It's based on the number of unique visitors to the page. So apparently there's quite a bit of interest in, I guess turn-based strategy is not quite as dead as people keep telling me.
Good.
Success.
It's
all
a day of happy statistics.
I tell you. Well, it's kind of nice to hear some good news since, I mean, the hurricane was obviously so devastating to the United States. And, you know, a lot of people are trying to profit now from the hurricane, of course, as we knew that would happen. And apparently one of the things that has happened is there's somebody who somehow a long time ago got the phone number 1-800-RED-CROSS and has been squatting on it all this time. And they don't, they want a six-figure sum to turn it over to the Red Cross. Have you heard about this?
Oh, my God.
I know.
They should put that guy's name, like, on television. This is that man.
Right. Well, they have. Apparently, let's see if I can find his name here. But, I mean, he has this whole business. Derek?
Oddly enough, his name's Steve Parker.
Oh, is it really?
It is. Now, this is not the Stephen Parker who
Neil
is
Wynn.
Neil Bond at Neowyn. No, that's not him. No connection whatsoever.
It?
It's just, or so they would have you believe.
Right. So
just
apparently,
an unfortunate coincidence.
Right. Apparently, people trying to call 1-800-RED-CROSS probably just taking a wild stab at, you know, that's probably their number. They're answered by some cheery male voice announcing, "Thank you for calling 1-800-IDEAS.com of San Diego, California." So they just have they get this voicemail for this company who's, you know, and apparently the Red Cross is not the only number they've squatted on. I don't know.
Well, the good news about, mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, Kristen.
Well, I was just going to say, on the one hand, you know, if you're quick enough to get out there and get something and squat on it, I guess it's more power to you. But on the other hand,
this is
we're talking about the Red Cross
slimy.
Here. Yeah, that's no. That's not
well, this is also, I mean, the good news of this story is the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, did step in, and after only a day of arbitration or whatever the process mm-hmm. is, they snatched the phone number away
right.
and turned it over to the Red Cross. I just called it before we started the podcast, and it is indeed the Red Cross. It does forwarded you to the 1-800-HELP-NOW phone number they've been using, but it now belongs to the Red Cross after the FTC moved very quickly to address the situation.
Mm-hmm. And get those guys over at FEMA.
at least somebody's moved quickly on something here. So that's in relation.
Too bad
to
it was only a phone number.
Right.
You know?
Right.
The funny thing, too, listening to the fella who squatted on it originally, he insists, and I love how these guys can come up with stories like this, that he licensed it, that he secured that phone number for a company he was starting up called Red Arms, which 1-800-RED-ARMS coincidentally spells out the same number as 1-800-RED-CROSS.
Right.
I wonder how long he sat around to figure out that excuse.
Right. How long it took him to figure out he needs to call his business Red Arms before he got that phone number. Right.
Yeah, that's pretty creative.
But I think this is an all's well that ends well kind of situation where it's clearly a situation where it's in the public interest for the FTC to step in and sort of address this.
Right.
Yeah.
He says the only thing they ever wanted from the Red Cross was the cost to maintain the number for 15 or 20 years, which he estimates is in the low six figures. Well, there you go.
I don't think so. We have, you call 1-888-STARDOC to order today, and it does not cost us anywhere near that kind of money. It's like
what's
some trivial amount per month.
$20 a year?
Yeah, it's something trivial.
Well, it's the maintenance, Derek. It's not the actual phone.
Oh, yes, of course.
It's having the people sitting there answering it and, you know, all that stuff that goes along.
You mean the answering machine that you get? Thank you for calling 800-IDEAS.
Right. So, well,
it's a hell of an answering machine.
That is good news, at least, you know, out of something that's not so. I can understand attempting to make a buck, but to make a buck from a nonprofit organization who exists to try and help people, you know.
Yeah. Yay for the FCC on this one, for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. Exactly. All right. Well, in other news, Americans are lazy.
What?
Who I don't knew? I'm shocked. No. Apparently, somebody has done a study. American workers lazy or creative?
I like the list. We're creative. Here
right.
I am chewing my own food like a chump.
Right. I could be getting that stuff injected right into my veins. What was I thinking?
Well, we have to be creative to be lazy a different way every time.
That's right. So we don't.
We're not lazy. We're efficient.
Right. So a study was done to find out how much time Americans waste at work. Anybody
right.
want to take a guess on how many?
Yeah. Bill Coleman, the senior vice president of compensation at salary.com, in conjunction with AOL's user base and the general internet user, they sent out a survey and got somewhere around 10,000 responses. And they figured out that the average person wastes roughly 2.09 hours per day, not including lunch and scheduled break times.
That sounds
about
right.
According to our spy cameras, people waste a lot more than that.
We're talking on average, though, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, on average.
Yeah.
There were some interesting figures, though. I noticed that the leading by state, in the state-by-state figures, Missouri wasted on average 3.2 hours a day, and number two was way down at 2.8 hours a day. I mean, Missouri, far and away, there must be something in the water, or I don't know what they're doing there.
Well, there is something in the water now.
But Missouri is the state for loafing, apparently.
Okay. Well, I'm off to Missouri, then. I'll see y'all later.
I think you may want to rethink that, given recent events.
I suppose so. Well, maybe I can make a buck, you know.
Actually, I think Missouri's got a nice buffer between itself and most of Katrina, doesn't it? It's got sort of Arkansas sitting in the way, Tennessee. I think Missouri's back far enough. There are 3.2 hours a day, if you want. That's the acceptable rate in Missouri.
Incredible. I think most of them are surfing the internet. That's, I think, the number one way to...
Counted as wasting time. I mean, surfing the internet was the lead, but they also, some people considered for wasting time, they were just spacing out was one of the activities.
I do that all the time.
But there was also socializing with coworkers, which can be an important aspect of any job. And even as Mr. Coleman in interviews mentioned about the study, said there's a lot of creative time wasting that goes on that goes towards creative pursuits, improving company morale, coming up with new ideas. So the figure could be a little misleading as far as what's considered wasting time. I think.
That's a good point because, I mean, morale, what is more in terms of efficiency, happy employees are less likely to leave, and turnover is what kills a lot of companies.
Right. And also in terms of efficiency, a lot of the people surveyed said the reason they were wasting time is because of lack of work. So in some of these situations, you could say it's the company's fault for not efficiently using their manpower. But it was certainly an interesting study. I think it's also worth noting that the study was only of AOL users. I would be interested in seeing how it broke down with, say, blue-collar versus white-collar jobs, professional workers versus more labor-oriented workers. I don't imagine there are a lot of people on road repair crews surfing the internet.
Right. That is very true.
Well, in the software industry, sales go down. So in the summer, Stardock actually becomes a landscaping business. So we just put those guys out there planting shrubberies and that kind of thing, weeding.
Right.
They did break down, too, by different sectors of the job types of jobs, who wasted the most time working. And I think the software industry was number five. The number one industry, insurance. Huh. Lots of time to waste. Wow. Become an insurance worker in Missouri, and you get
half
you're
good
off.
To go.
Yeah, now, of course, you know, I mean, they are, well, I guess you're right. They're far enough away from Katrina that they're on the Mississippi, but they're far enough away from Katrina. But I'm sure insurance workers right now have plenty to do.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, as you say, Tom, I can't imagine construction workers, you know, wasting a lot of time. I'm sure they do.
Does catcalling women who walk by count as
time-wasting activity?
They were, of course, they were also of necessity excluded from this survey since it was an internet-based survey.
And Coleman also did point out that this isn't necessarily a negative trend. I mean, they point out that I think the projected money lost, if you were to pool all this wasted time, the study mentioned that it was $759 billion worth of salary going to pay this wasted time. But the converse side of that was that people are putting in more hours at work. There's more of a blurred line between personal and professional time. It's an interesting issue, but I don't think it's as clear-cut as saying everyone is now wasting 2 hours a day at work.
Right. I know. I used to have a job where because I worked at a university, when school was in session, of course, I was very busy. And in the summer, it was like a ghost town. So, I mean, in the summer, I wasted, I can't tell you how much time. But I worked very hard the rest of the year to make up for it. So, you know, everybody's got their own schedule for wasting time, I suppose.
And I would wager a lot of people listening to this podcast right now are at work wasting time.
Bad. Good. And tailgate all your friends. You don't want to be left out in the cold.
Right, exactly. Well, speaking of podcasting and iTunes, yeah, it's a stretch, but I'm trying to segue this now.
That works.
Steve Jobs announces a new iTunes phone and tiny new iPod. Has anybody seen pictures of these things?
Yeah, new toys. They look great.
Yeah.
It's the new iShoehorn.
Yes, you can carry around music in just about anything you want now. New iTunes Pen, iTunes, no. So
our
iTunes
long national
phone.
Nightmare is at an end.
That's right. iTunes phone. Currently, you can only put 100 songs on the phone, but I don't know that for a phone, that might be enough. Actually,
it has an upgradable memory chip that you can put in it, but the software itself limits it at 100 songs, so it doesn't matter what memory's in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the downsides. That's why people reviewing, like, was it VNU.net? They said it's practically useless as a music player. If you're going to buy it for a phone with music, okay. But one, it's too expensive for the market they're going for. You know, the Rocker, Motorola Rocker phone,
mm-hmm.
is priced at $250 with a two-year contract, and there are no kickbacks. You know, there are no mail-in rebates,
right.
or anything like that. And they're primarily going after, you know, teens and people who can't really afford it.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty steep for a phone.
And aren't they also, actually, you might know, Derek, is it the case that you can only download songs from iTunes, or can you put your own MP3s on the phone? Do you know?
I don't know. I haven't looked into it.
I think I might have read. I could be mistaken about that. And that seems like a huge limitation.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can put MP3s in iTunes. I mean, iTunes supports MP3 files.
You know what? I'm confusing iTunes and iStore. You don't have to pay for it. Okay, so you're
right.
Absolutely right. But you're right. It is tied into iTunes.
I can see some uses for this. I mean, how about the person wants to go work out, and they want to have their cell phone with them, and they want to listen to music. 100 songs is going to be more than enough
for
that.
Yeah, workout.
Sure, that's going to get you through an hour or two right there.
Mm-hmm. I'd hope.
but for those who are going to pick this up to potentially replace their old cell phone and their iPod and put it into one unit, and carry it with them, it just doesn't have the
yeah, it doesn't cut it there.
Right.
And I think also one of the drawbacks for it is that it's not, the iPod was sort of released, there wasn't that much in terms of a competing product. Sony, I think, they either have out now or they're creating a Walkman phone, so there's definitely competition to get this kind of functionality into cell phones.
Yeah, but there's a Harry Potter iPod now.
Yes.
So,
right. Yes, there
you know.
Is.
So
kids,
I mean, why would you even look at anything other than Apple product if you can get the Harry Potter one?
Well,
and do people really want? Do people really want that sort of added functionality in their cell phones? There's a lot of effort to put those things in there, but I don't know how well those things are doing. Cameras are nice little toys, but don't most people, they have a cell phone and they have a digital camera
and the digital camera
portable
usually,
game player.
Well, that's kind of, and that's a good point, because most of the time the problem is that these add-on things to the phone just aren't nearly good enough. I have I got the Samsung A800, I think it is. It's just out of reach. It's out of battery too, and it has a pretty impressive camera supposedly, but the quality on it is not nearly as good as even a cheap digital camera. And the same thing here, 100 songs, it's just not going to be enough to get most people to. I mean, there are niche uses for it, but I'm really surprised Apple didn't try to get it to where it can be a full replacement.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe it depends on the licensing deal, I guess.
Yeah, well, in addition to these other announcements, apparently Madonna has put her music on iTunes, which she hadn't done before.
Mm-hmm.
And J.K. Rowling has allowed her books, her audiobooks, to be put up on iTunes. If you've never listened to the Harry Potter books, the audio version, they're really quite well done.
Does she read them herself, or are
no,
they
she
actors?
Doesn't.
Okay.
Jim Dale, I believe, reads those, and they're really great. So,
and those are actually very smart moves. I mean, get a high profile name like that behind you, and even if the technology isn't that attractive, I mean, it certainly gives it a lot more prestige.
Right.
Yeah, they still don't have Jonathan Williams on there though, en masse. They only have a few select things from him, so you can't get to all those good movies that he did the soundtracks for.
Oh, right. But there's still a few artists that are holding out, I guess.
I tell you, it is amazing, though, how iTunes is stored. I just wish they carried more. I wanted to, there's a popular ad going around, I can't remember the name of the song, I should, because I looked for it, but it's like, this is a very big ad, very, very big ad, dun, 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 right? And I was looking for a song, and iTunes didn't have it, but buymusic.com did. And I can tell you, the buying experience through buymusic.com versus iTunes is like night and day. I mean, it took forever for me to actually get the song, download it, and start being able to play it versus iTunes. So I sometimes wonder, well, why doesn't iTunes have more songs?
I think it's up to the artists to put them on there. And some artists, for one reason or another, don't want to do it. I can't imagine why they wouldn't want to, quite frankly. Yeah,
a lot of it comes down to the record labels more so than the artists. You know, an individual artist can say, no, I don't want my music on there, and that's between them and their contract with the record label. So there's a lot of that going on,
right,
too.
I just want to say I was overjoyed that we got to hear Brad Wardell sing for us just now.
No. That was Tom Chick who sang that. I just want, for future reference, Tom Chick, C-H-I-C-K.
It's fine.
The far more exciting part of the announcement, though, was this little iPod Nano, which is definitely the sort of thing that I need to run out and buy immediately. That thing looks amazing.
That's the shoehorn.
Right.
So you can slip your shoe on with it. It's so thin. It's thinner than a number two pencil.
And not only a number two pencil, Derek, that's slightly misleading. It's the kind of number two pencil you use at the putt-putt golf course, one of those tiny shaved-down number two pencils. This thing is tiny. It's amazing.
And it still holds 4 gigabytes.
Yeah, my iPod is now obsolete. I now have this big clunker of an iPod, and they've got this beautiful little thing. Also amazing about this, 14-hour battery life. About time.
Yeah, it is about time, actually, on that. We have one of the older models in the battery. We've got the battery problem, of course, so 4 hours is
now, if I could just find a good FM transmitter for the iPod. I've gotten, like, iTravel.
Yeah, we have that, too.
And it is, you know, it's just not that good.
It's not.
Right.
Belkin makes a nice one I have.
Don't get me started. I had Belkins, too, and theirs was even worse, I thought, for the car. I mean, the idea is I want to be able to listen to stuff on the car. I've subjected to my family on a trip up north to listening to hours and hours of podcasts, and I was doing it through my iPod, and it was not a great experience, that's for sure.
Well, you have the most patient
family. They need more power.
I have to say, yeah.
What's that?
I you have the most patient family in the world, I think.
Yes. Well, they're in coma, and, you know, now. But.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
I think on your next trip, Brad, you should sing for them.
Yes.
Sing. I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay.
That's two songs we've gotten from
That's
Brad Wardell
awesome.
Today.
C-H-I-C-K.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's unfortunate that iPod is so small, though, because I know as soon as I bought it, I would lose it. It would go by immediately.
Exactly. It needs some sort of a wrist strap or something. It wouldn't have been twice as big as it is to keep it from being lost.
Well, you know how Fast and Furious accessories for iPods and all the new models are.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
When we did a review of it was basically a sock, to be honest. It was a little cloth bag that you put your iPod in. And we did a full-blown, I think, 2 or 3 page review about this sock. iPod sock.
Perfect.
My little iPod is now, it's a big clunky, it's got a case on it and this elastic strip that basically doubles its size because I wear it on my arm at the gym. So suddenly there's the convenience of this little tiny thing is now this big clunky thing that I have laying around the house with a strap and the case on it. And what am I going to do with that little tiny putt-putt pencil size?
Well, yeah. Well, why don't you just wear a pocket protector?
Well, you can have it surgically mounted to your body. That's what I
think. I think Kristen's onto something. Have it the little chip underneath your skin, an implant.
Oh, you
That's
laugh,
when we've really
it's coming.
Hit it.
It's
when you can
copies.
Get 1,000 songs on a 4 gigabyte implant under your skin, then we're set.
Yes. I think they had those at Dragon Con, didn't they?
Well, they tried to claim they did, yes. Well, technology moving ever forward, and that's great. You know, the next step is we're going to Mars. Not we as a nation, of course, but of course, you know, the only way we're going to go to the stars is through corporations who see a profit in it, of course.
There's a profit in going to Mars?
Yeah, apparently. That's what some people say. So there's this new company, Four Frontiers, which plans to mine Mars for building materials and energy sources.
What materials would these be?
I don't know how they plan to get themselves back and forth and bring all these materials back to us, but this is their current plan. The materials are, let me see if I can find it. I know some
carbon,
of them are
carbon, nitrogen, hydrogen. Mm-hmm. That's what they were saying was all scarce on the moon but readily available on Mars.
Right. And they also say it's easier to harvest oxygen on Mars as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. So honestly, I don't I think somebody on Neowin actually even made a comment of, you know, I don't know about giving my money, because they're looking for donations now. I don't know about giving my money to somebody who's going to take it to Mars with them.
They're not, so they're looking for investors.
Yeah, well, yes, right. They are. They are. I mean, personally, if I was going to go mine Mars, I don't think I'd be looking at the hydrogen, but maybe
They're
not
looking to send people.
Enough.
I assume this is all automated, not sending human beings over there, right?
Oh yeah, no. The company also wants to build the first permanent human settlement on Mars using strictly Martian materials as early as 2025.
Oh, mm-hmm. Not 2020. Had they solved the problem with, you know, humans would die if they tried going over there because of interstellar radiation and
other minute
particles that go right through the hull of the skin of the ship and would kill anyone on the way there.
Oh, Brad, must you pee pee on everything?
I know. It's true though. They have to develop some sort of
no engineer
in the
world.
Water or something around the ship to shield the people inside from interstellar cosmic radiation, that sort of thing.
These are the same people, though, that are behind. Well, they've hired someone from behind Biosphere 2, which is an experiment that dealt with this sort of thing. Is how can you create a human community in a closed environment like that?
Right. Bruno Marino, one of the directors of science and research at Biosphere, was brought on.
I think one of their ways that they're planning on raising money is they're going to build a replica of the biosphere on Earth and then, you know, charge people to tour it, which could actually be interesting, I suppose, depending on how much they're charging.
Well, they already have that. I mean, Biosphere 2 right now, you know, mm-hmm. they had an experiment with scientists who were in there for, I believe it was 2 years.
Wait,
it's still there.
Wasn't that a Pauly Shore movie?
Yeah.
Come on, Tom.
That was Biodome.
Oh, I see.
I'm sorry to say that I actually know that. Biosphere 2 is in Tucson, and it's still there. You can go there, and I imagine there's an admission fee, and you can go through. And the idea is, can we create in one closed environment the different types of environments on Earth? You know, there's a savanna, there's an ocean, there's a desert, there's a rainforest. I mean, they try to create all that in this dome, this biodome in Tucson, they've brought the guy who did that over to help them present this idea of doing it on Mars. And it's funny, if you go to their website, the front page of the website has all of these sort of cheerleading quotes about how we need to explore space and it's the final frontier, and this is just another issue of the privatization of space exploration. You know, NASA is in a sort of a sad state these days, and these are the people that are sort of picking up the pieces.
Right. However far-fetched their ideas may seem, honestly, I think that's how we're going to get there, is when Hilton decides to build a hotel on the moon.
Right.
You know, then we're going to all be going to the moon, you know.
And I do have to say, it does sound crazy to me. I mean, I'm just a layman. I don't know. But it sounds crazy to me to leapfrog the moon like this and go straight to Mars. It just seems to make much more sense based on distance, and I think maybe it was Derek that mentioned getting materials back. That's crazy. The moon is so much closer. Even if it's more difficult to mine these, wouldn't it be much easier to have them closer to home? And I think their idea is that eventually this will be the hub of the solar system on Mars, which is a, you know, from a science fiction perspective, a very attractive idea. And I guess the fact of the matter is the moon is old and busted, and Mars is the new hotness.
And Mars has been getting a lot of coverage lately because it's been it's closer to Earth, or was closer to Earth on, what, August 22nd than it's been in, you know, well, since last year. But then it'll be again for 400 years.
And, well, in the moon, we've already done that. You know, the moon's played out. No one goes there anymore. It's gray. In the moon, you see it every night, and all these old men have already been there.
Tom, you see the moon. But does the moon see you?
Yes, it does. It looks at me.
I see the moon.
When I stare.
That's three. You started singing again.
Brad's
turn.
Okay, as a side note, we're going to be taking all these little songs, mixing them in with developers, and the Numa Numa guy, and we're going to put a techno beat to it, and it will be released on Power User TV.
That's all right.
But will it be on iStore?
Absolutely.
Will you be able to download?
iTunes,
most definitely.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's how we're going to fund this podcast, baby.
For $19.95.
Right.
But I do think the real issue here, I mean, it's all about the privatization of space exploration, and I think that's fine because it's a whole different scene now. That NASA served its place during, you know, the space race was a big part of the Cold War, and I am of the opinion that I don't think the government really needs to be pouring that much money into space exploration. It's a noble idea, but I think it's very much an idea whose time has sort of come and gone, and I'm okay with the privatization of space
exploration. Didn't Bush just say not too long ago that he wanted to be on Mars within 10 years?
Bush says a lot of things.
Yeah.
Never mind what I just said.
But yeah, that's like, you know, Mars is the new hotness. Everybody loves Mars
right.
these days.
Well,
yeah.
It seems like, you know, we've been to the moon, you know, so why?
Yeah, but didn't they see 2010? Everyone knows that, what is it, Ganymede or whatever, one of the moons of Jupiter.
Ganymede.
That's right. That's right, Dragon Con girl.
Ganymede.
Isn't that where we want to go? You know, there's supposedly, that's where the monolith is, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, that is exactly right.
I think we've topped out in the geek quotient on this particular podcast.
We just fly up there in our Pan Am spaceship. And,
no, we have not yet begun to get as geeky as we can get on this thing.
Yeah. Well.
But we're going to cut it off there because, you know, we don't want to over-geek ourselves. We just want to try and discuss the facts, and then we'll let our audience think about it.
Damn the facts. I'm going to Mars.
That's right. Yeah. Damn the facts that I'll die if I try and go to Mars. I'll be irradiated to death. I'll just hop on a spaceship and go. The last topic, and I think there's really no segue here. The last topic we have, not the last.
We got a bunch of good gaming stuff.
We have a bunch of good gaming stuff. The last topic, before we get to the gaming stuff, we previously had discussed Microsoft and Google being in the non-compete lawsuit with Kai-Fu Lee,
yes.
The Microsoft employee who wanted to go to Google. Well, someone has apparently come out with a quote. Mark Lukowski said that he left Microsoft to join Google, and when he told Steve Ballmer this, Steve Ballmer actually threw a chair across the office and threatened to f***ing kill Google when he found out about it.
The quote's actually a bit more lurid than that. I won't say the whole thing, but there were several F-bombs dropped throughout.
Right, he's going to bury. Yeah, they're going to bury Google. The one part I thought was interesting is he says, "I've done it before."
Yeah, that's sort of.
Is he saying he's buried Google? Yeah, I must have missed that. Or is he talking about I crushed OS 2 and then I crushed Netscape and now just.
Well, that's why we don't hear about whoever it is because he crushed them.
Yeah.
Crushed them dead before we even learned about them, apparently.
What's funny was this, he said this was on his mind from the beginning, because at some point Ballmer said, just tell me it's not Google. And Lukowski said, it's Google.
Right.
And that's when Ballmer picked up a chair and threw it across the room and hit a table in his office.
Nice.
I have to say, if one of our competitors, or like there's not that many, but let's pretend that we had competitors, I could see being incensed by that.
Right. If a bunch of your developers decided to go work for Confabulator.
Right.
Perhaps.
I mean, our biggest competitor's office is currently underwater. But
right. Which is a shame, actually. But
yes.
The thing I found humorous about this story was Ballmer made it personal with Google CEO Eric Schmidt. He says, "I'm going to f***ing bury that guy. I've done it before, and I'll do it again."
Right. Well,
and it was like
that's what I wanted to know. Well, I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
That's what I would like to know is, you know, he buried him before.
Right. Buried somebody before.
Yeah,
presumably he's referring to somebody else, not actually.
Well, give us some more meat, because that's very interesting.
Well, right. Schmidt previously worked at Sun Microsystems and was the CEO of Novell, so did Ballmer crush them as well, or, you know, where is it going?
Well, I would say Novell is not what, you know, is a shell of their former selves.
Hmm. Well, and we're getting away from the really exciting part of this, which is really the chair throwing. I mean, I would love to know a bit more about it. I want to know, what kind of chair was it? Was it one of those expensive Aeon Flux or Aeron chairs?
Right.
Or
did
was it a metal chair? Was it like WWF kind of situation where he takes a metal folding chair? And I'm sure it's heavier than any chair I could throw,
so that officially means that Steve Ballmer could kick my ass.
How far did he throw it? Did he break the desk that it hit?
That's true.
I'd really like to know these things.
Well,
I would have liked
say,
to have seen it
where's
go through a window. Yeah, we need
he threw a chair across his office. And you know,
how big is his office?
Big office. Oh,
yeah,
big.
There you go. Exactly.
He's got to be at least like, what, a football field long, I'm sure.
Yeah. So. Can we Skype Jerry Springer and get his final thoughts on this?
Oh, yes. Nice, Derek. Very nice.
Excellent.
I'm sure he's available. He's just waiting around for us to call him. All right. okay, Brad and Tom and Derek, what's going on in the gaming world?
Not much.
Oh. Okay, well, thanks everybody for joining us.
This week, Cyan, is that the right pronunciation? I've only seen it red.
Yeah.
Cyan has closed their doors. They're the company that made Myst, the game that really made CD-ROM drives at the time really popular with their incredibly popular game. I think it was like the best-selling game for years until I think The Sims, maybe Roller Coaster Tycoon. I'm not sure which, but it's amazing that they're gone. They're gone.
They're just gone. They just laid off everybody, didn't they? Or just
actually,
about everybody.
Yeah, they're still around. The mm-hmm. founder is keeping the name. They have a fellow named Tony Fryman who's been there for a while, and mm-hmm. the two of them basically are all that's left of Cyan. But yeah, they closed down.
Wow.
They're shutting their doors, and it's not quite as significant a story as it might seem. It's not this sort of, oh, it's the end of an era. Mm-hmm. You know, we've lost Myst. Cyan only made the first two Mists, Myst and then Riven. The number three was made by one of their competitors. They actually hired them, Presto Studios. And four and five were made by Ubisoft's Montreal studio. So Cyan, as far as Myst as a single-player adventure game like we remember it, Cyan hasn't been that involved in that for a while. The problem with Cyan is they sort of put all their eggs in this online gaming basket and tried to create a game called Uru, which I don't think did very well. And they've been trying to chase down funding for more stuff, which I believe these were various online pursuits. They couldn't secure it, so they shut their doors. But the Myst franchise is going strong. The fifth one is about to come out. I know Ubisoft is very coy about saying this is the end of Myst, and you know, I'll believe that when I see it. It's a lucrative franchise, and I'm sure it'll exist in various forms for a while. So, but the guys who started it, they I think, had to throw in the towel after chasing online gaming. And then there's lots. This is happening right and left.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people don't realize that. You know, they see the success of World of Warcraft and EverQuest and that sort of thing. And you know, for every successful online-oriented game, there's you know the corpses of a dozen other games that tried to do much the same thing.
There's a lot of carnage out there, yeah.
It is. It's not an easy business, really. I mean, no, it probably seems like if you make it, it'll get, you know, you'll make $1 billion, you know, if you can just get it out there, but that's not the
way it works. You know what they say, the difference between a successful game company and one that's gone bankrupt is time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very true, yeah. And Cyan's time was certainly up. One of my favorite things about this story is there's sort of a really cute analog in a way between the character Rand Miller founded Cyan, and in all of the Myst games he plays Atris, who is this sort of kindly, avuncular, slightly befuddled inventor who creates these elaborate, beautiful worlds by writing in a book. And then things go wrong, and you have to come in and set them straight. And Rand Miller himself is a sort of a real-world analog to this Atris character, in that he created this amazing Myst world and then kind of lost control of it, and he went off in another direction. And there's this sort of poignant analog between Rand Miller himself and his character Atris.
Life imitates art and vice versa.
Very much so, yes.
And a sudden silence fills the room.
A moment of respect for Cyan.
Yeah, right. Indeed.
Yeah. But the more exciting, the far more dramatic news this week is the acquisition of IGN by the Rupert Murdoch's company.
All glory to the News Corp.
So they bought IGN?
$650 million. Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa.
Man,
IGN
you know how much
is also
gum I could buy for $650 million.
$650 million. Drooling just thinking about it, right?
I know. That's amazing. Now I'm not that familiar with all of IGN's properties. It seems like $650 million is just immense. I mean, I know there's IGN itself, there's GameSpy, there's File Planet. I wonder
GameSpy has
visitors
File
do you
Planet.
Think they get between all of their various networks? I mean, I think that one time they're at around 20 million uniques per month.
And that's really what they're buying. And then the thing about these uniques is they're very much buying from that 18 to 35-year-old male demographic, which is basically young, dumb guys with lots of disposable income and nothing to do with it. I think that's what they're buying.
Let's see. Well, Whitman Cummings and NeilWynn.net and Quarter to Three combined probably get a good 5 million uniques. Therefore, that's 1/4 as much. I'm willing to give them a cut on a break. I don't. 150 million. What do these guys think? $150 million?
The problem is we're all old guys with desktops, and we're not buying stuff anymore. We're far too smart for that. We're far too discriminating with our money. No one wants to advertise to us. Those people at News Corp aren't interested in the eyeballs we have to offer.
Yeah, besides, already gave my money to a guy in Nigeria who needed my help.
Right. He seemed like he really needed it. So.
Yep, he did.
Yes. Well, that is big news, but I don't know what to say about it because – A, I just can't fathom that amount of money.
I'll tell you what it makes me wonder. CNET owns GameSpot, and it does mean that at this point, there's lots of other game. Obviously, Ziff is still alive, but in terms of online presence, there's GameSpot, and then there's Fox. I mean, News Corp, so to speak, in terms of your daily news. I mean, there's a lot of others. I don't want to make it sound like those are the only players, but wow, it's really starting to get pretty concentrated.
Yeah, yeah. And it just leaves more room for smaller places to start up. Quarter to 3.com, for instance. There's more room for us to play,
yep.
I guess.
Quarter to 3.com.
All right, is there any other game news that we want
to... Well, I know the one that has me really happy on multiple levels is the announcement that Civilization IV apparently is going to be released in October.
Speaking of lost productivity at work, people wasting time. There you go.
I'm just totally jazzed. I mean, Civilization was what got me into making games in the first place, as many galactic civilizations might imply. We almost want the lawyers to chime in, not a guarantee. The words of Brad Wardell may not be taken seriously. Da-da-da-da-da. Boy prohibited in Alabama, New Mexico, and California. It is. I mean, in Civilization IV just looks totally awesome. I mean, it looks really good. And the fact that it's coming out in October helps us because Galactic Civilization II, which is supposed to come out in February, you want to have that distance between the 800-pound gorilla and, the latest Starduck thing, their Galactic Empire clone. And this is just good news for everyone on so many different levels.
Well, that's great.
And it's also it's quite a rarity in the gaming industry that a release date gets pushed up like that rather than pushed back. I'm very much looking forward to like Brad. I'm very much looking forward to Civilization IV and what I've seen of it. It looks I'm eager about some of the changes they've made, some of the refinements. That's just an amazing series, and it continues to get better.
Now, Tom, are we dinosaurs though? Because I was on talking to the NeilWynn game staff about these games, and they just, first of all, strategy games, they just went, blah, strategy, that includes real-time strategy, and then turn-based, if I could have seen their faces, I think they would have been giving me a look like, ew, yuck.
That's really easy to say until you've actually played them, though. I mean, you can sit someone in front of Civilization, and they start building their city and giving them names and moving men around and discovering things. It's really easy to poo-poo turn-based strategy until you get something as streamlined and addictive as a Civilization game in front of someone. But yes, also in answer to your question, we are dinosaurs, but that doesn't mean that turn-based strategy is old and busted.
I agree with that. The funny thing is that with regards to the whole turn-based thing is, it's from a killing point of view, nothing can beat a turn-based strategy game. I mean, these first-person shooters, you're killing one guy at a time. In Civilization, you're wiping out entire civilizations at once. I mean, which, abstracted would mean millions of people are being exterminated at your hands. I mean, woo-hoo. How can, in terms of, in terms of feeling of an accomplishment, how
Tristan's
can you
like
compare
that
killing one person at a time to killing millions at a time?
Does Galciv 2 have orbital bombardment, though? I mean, that's the one you
can't
beat.
Oh, don't get me started there. That was just debated here today.
Can you blow up a planet? Can you pull a Death Star on a planet?
We have Terror Stars where you wipe out... now that would be interesting. The Terror Stars destroy the star, but the planets
that's
in
even
orbit
better.
Are actually multiple, owned by different players.
You heard it here first, folks.
if we put it in.
There goes your... Yeah, I think that merits an M rating.
It's kind of funny. We had a little off topic, but we had a new guy come in who's kind of fresh out of college, and like, okay, well, where are we going to put him? We put him on Galactic Civilization. So we said, well, go ahead and do Fleet Combat. You know, Fleet Combat in Galactic Civilizations 2 was going to be basically like a ripoff from Warlords. Do you remember the, you know, top row of bad guys, row of your guys, and boom, 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 they're gone. But we left him alone with it for like a month, and yesterday he was showing it off, and it looks like something out of Star Trek. I mean, the ship's just flying around, shooting, and it's like, wow, it looks really cool. So it is, I don't know, other than that shameless plug, I'm trying to think of how way to wrap that in there.
But thousands of people dying. Far more violent than the average first-person shooter. Yeah.
That's right. And, well, not to mention, I'm saying it's turn-based games, especially when you can represent what's happening in them, can be pretty exciting, I think.
I agree. And the, you know, the new Advance Wars games on the Game Boy, little handheld, those are very popular as well, and they're very retro. It's old school.
I haven't tried
gaming.
Those. I've heard good things about it.
Yeah, they're great. They're great for dinosaurs like you and me and for the kids these days. Was that a dinosaur noise, or was that you doing your fourth song for the
podcast? No, that was Tom Chick. C-H-I-C-K.
That's awesome. I'm totally leaving that in.
No.
And on that note, is there anything else you want to throw in about games? Anybody? Anybody?
Yeah.
Well, we're coming up on... it's going to be a lot busier. This is the beginning of the holiday deluge. The Xbox
Age
360
of Empires
will launch.
Demo came
lots
out yesterday.
Of titles coming out. Yeah, Age of Empires 3 demo, Civilization 4. It's about to get very, very busy and very, very exciting for those of us who are into games.
What's the hot game every kid wants under the Christmas tree this year?
Microsoft would have you believe it's an Xbox 360. But there's just so. I mean, that's. Let's do a show on that. What are the hot games?
Yeah, that would be. That we should do a specific thing on that. But you know, Age of Empires 3 has some really cool technology where is it mid mapping? Oh God, I can't normal mapping. Essentially, it's a 3D technology that allows units to have a lot more detail. So I think Age of Empires 3 is definitely worth looking at, especially from a graphical point of view. I think it represents where you're going to see games go in the future in terms of being able to have really detailed-looking units that don't use that many polygons.
Right, right.
Plus, the bastard stole our lead artist for that project. I'm just kidding. Please send me a free copy.
Brad, are you going to throw a chair across the room right now?
Yes, yeah. I'm going to bury them. Yeah.
As soon as I get somebody to help me pick up this chair, I'm totally going to throw it.
Yeah. I'm going to give you the beating of a life.
That's right. On that note, we should probably end it here so Brad doesn't hurt his back trying to throw something.
Too late.
Thanks for listening, everybody. This podcast was brought to you by neowin.net, wincustomized.com, and quarter to 3.com. Support us, as you have been clearly, by subscribing to us on iTunes, Podnova, or odeo.com, and look for us every week at www.poweruser.tv. Nicely said, Brad.
That was great.